Coming up on today's Locked On Dodgers, Andrew Heaney looked really good. Gavin Lux started off hot, and the offense looked a little different. That's what's on tap, so make sure to keep it Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yo, 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 Dodger fans, welcome to Locked On Dodgers. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. I want to thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen of the day every day and remind you that you can search for Locked On Dodgers wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube, and we're free. Even easier, subscribe in all those places and you'll never miss a day because you know we're not going to. If this is your first time listening or watching, I'm Vin Samperio here with my co-host Jeff Snyder. We are lifelong Dodger fans just like you. We've also spent some time in the press box and the locker room, so we have a little bit different perspective, but we remain the smart fans' perspective on your boys in blue every weekday morning. So go ahead and subscribe wherever you listen or watch, and let's talk Dodgers. Jeff, Dodgers won in a game that ended up going about 5 hours or 5.5 hours almost because of a rain delay, but rain delays are fine when the Dodgers end up winning, and that's what happened. Offense broke out late in the game, and then the rain delay happened. But either way, the Dodgers got their runs in. Andrew Heaney looked really good. That's going to be our first topic of the day. Andrew Heaney had 15 swings and misses, apparently found a new grip and a new pitch in Colorado during a bullpen session, and looked like a completely different pitcher than he did in the spring.
Yeah, and you know the Dodgers signed him because they knew he had good stuff and they thought there was something they could unlock. We knew he was a project. And I don't think though that any of us necessarily expected the project to pay off like this in his first start. And we have to temper our expectations. You know, he's going to have a bad start. I'm sure at some point it's not just going to be nowhere but up from here. But the fact is he looked great. He should have gone five innings. He got a double play ball to end the top or bottom of the fifth that unfortunately Trey Turner, instead of getting two outs on, he got zero outs and allowed a run to score. I assume that was weather related. Trey Turner doesn't generally just fall over for no reason. But you know, Andrew Heaney, 4 1/3, no earned runs, should have been five innings and looked great. Like you said, it wasn't flukish. He was getting a ton of swing and misses. And Joe and Eric talked on the broadcast about how the Twins hitters looked like they were facing a pitcher they hadn't prepared for. And that's because they hadn't prepared for him, because this pitch he was throwing is something that no one has ever seen him throw, because he's never thrown in a game before. And it's a crazy thing to, as a major league pitcher, go out and say, well, I'm going to go experiment in a game and see what happens. And it worked for him. It'll be interesting to see as the word gets out, and as the scouting report gets out, his next start, teams will be expecting that new shape of slider. And so we'll see if it's as effective. I would expect it to lose some effectiveness, but it is legitimately a good pitch. That's why he developed it. It's, you know, the Dodgers have kind of a few guys who throw this sweeping slider that is really, really effective, even if you are prepared for it. And so while I would expect some rebound, I think it seems like a really good sign.
Yeah, if you're going to get 15 swings and misses through 4 1/3 every game, you know, probably not realistically not, but like you said, it's something that he's added to his repertoire, something that he's still developing. And, you know, Byron Buxton spent the weekend terrorizing Mariners pitching, struck out twice against Heaney, ended up striking out three times total in the game. The only one he didn't fool was Carlos Correa. And Carlos Correa is probably the guy he's faced the most, I would imagine, on the Twins team, just because they were both in the same division for a few years. You know, didn't quite fool him, but fooled everyone else. And that's what, you know, at the end of the day, ultimately mattered. And, you know, kind of like you said, a big difference from what we saw in spring. We had already seen, you know, I had seen an article and a couple people kind of talking about Heaney and saying, like, you know, why is he automatically in the rotation? And Roberts had mentioned that he's in the rotation because he's more comfortable. You know, Tyler Anderson started as a piggyback type of guy and everything else. And, you know, it does. I mean, I would like to use this as a point that it goes to show that spring training, you know, doesn't matter to a certain extent. But he didn't really have this pitch in spring training. We knew that he was toying with a new curveball grip, but this is not a, you know, this is completely different. This is more of a sweeping slider type thing. You know, they did mention on the broadcast that it's a little bit, or not worrisome, but it's a little scary throwing it to right-handers, because if you do hang it, it ends up going right in the wheelhouse. But, you know, that's how any lefty pitcher with this type of pitch has to deal with. So it's not just Andrew Heaney. But, yeah, for the first time out for a Twins team that offensively looked pretty good the first weekend against the Mariners and their pitching, you know, you can't help but be happy with the performance.
Yeah, and we had mentioned a week or two ago when we realized that of these 16 pitchers currently on the Dodgers roster, seven of them are going to have to go away in the next month or so, because you lose three roster spots for pitchers, and you have Caleb Ferguson and Tommy Canley and Phil Bickford and Victor Gonzalez coming back from injury. That's seven spots. And so we had kind of mentioned that that was kind of the timeline that, you know, May 1st ish was the time that Andrew Heaney has to show, hey, I deserve to be on this team. And this was a really good first start. I mean, clearly right up there with probably the best start the Dodgers have had so far this year, even better than Walker Buehler probably. And it was, he couldn't have made a better case for himself in his first start than what he did. And everything that he did, you know, he has the poise of a veteran. Even when he was getting rocked in spring training, you saw, you know, he kept coming back. There was that one appearance where they pulled him out mid-inning, and then he came back and pitched two more innings, you know, and he has that poise of a veteran. If you read Fabian Ardaia's article on The Athletic about him, it kind of talks about some of the stuff he's been through. And, you know, he's been through Tommy John surgery. He's been through thinking his career was over a couple different times. And so he's kind of at that point where there's maybe not nothing to lose, but he's got that perspective of, you know, he's almost, what is he, like 31 years old now. And so he's got the wisdom of age behind him. And yeah, I think that poise helped him to kind of stay the course and remember, even when he was getting rocked in spring training, I signed with the Dodgers because I think they can help me. It's a process, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it's still a process, but we definitely saw a step forward in that process.
Yeah, looking forward to the next one. Staying real quick on the pitching side, Bruce Dry-Gradrock came in that jam after Turner's error, ended up finishing that inning and getting into the next inning. Daniel Hudson looked good again. So, you know, they closed out. Once they went up 7-1, Gary Clevinger and Phillips ended up closing it out, which, you know, Phillips seems more of a guy that has a chance of sticking around, although it's probably not as likely. You know, Clevinger's more of a guy that will probably head out once the rosters go down or once one of these other pitchers comes back. But, you know, for the fact of Gratterall and Hudson looking good, just another good sign for the bullpen.
Yeah, and David Price made a season debut.
Yeah.
And, you know, in really rough circumstances, the rain was coming down pretty hard when he came in. He walked the first batter he faced, but then he got out of the inning, got the third out, and all in all, you know, what you to be thrown in that situation, hey, you haven't pitched in a competitive game in 8 months. It's a downpour. Why don't you go out there and get this third out for us in a 1-1 game? Tough situation. And he got the job done. You know, we didn't really get to see enough of him to really know what to expect, but, you know, it was successful anyway.
Yeah, exactly. All right. We're going to talk about another guy who's been successful at the plate, Gavin Lux. First, let's talk about Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar out there. I don't know, maybe Gavin Lux is on Built Bars because he's been hitting the ball pretty well. And they are good for you. They are great tasting. They're all covered in chocolate. They taste like a candy bar, but they do not have the macros that a candy bar has, because they are low calorie, low sugar, low carbs, high protein, high fiber. Not only do you get the typical or best candy bar taste, but you get something that's a little bit more healthy and good for you. You can use it whenever you need as a snack, as your breakfast, whatever it is. Built Bar is there for you whenever you need it, and they can be there for you at 15% off. If you go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, that's 15% off at built.com with the promo code LOCKED15. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen of the day every day. For another listen, check out the Locked On Now podcast with recaps of MLB games with analysis from all the local experts. taking fans through the season like no other network. Locked On Now podcast has you covered. Just imagine us for other teams. Some are solo, some are double. But either way, Locked On Now podcast, check it out. Free and available wherever you get podcasts. All right, Jeff. So far in this season, we're all happy about Gavin Lux, but as someone who continued to drive the Gavin Lux train, I know you're smiling a little extra with this start that he's had so far. Specifically in the game, Gavin Lux had two of the top three exit velocities. He had two of the top three distances of balls hit, and he has continued to be a force down there in the number nine hole, currently hitting .417 with an OPS of .967.
Yeah, Gavin Lux can hit. That's the bottom line. And when he gets a chance to play every day like he's getting, I've been really pleased to see that for all Dave Roberts' love of tinkering with lineups, Gavin Lux has been in the lineup every day. You know, he's played second base three times, and he played left field once. And I love that. You know, that we may see him get his first day off here this morning after a long day. I don't know, though. Against Chris Paddock, I guess Paddock does – is he still relying on that changeup?
Lux is one of the youngest. I doubt he's getting the day off.
Yeah, that's probably true. I was just thinking because, you know, you look at the guys who are likely to get a start. Hanser Alberto is one of them. And, you know, second base might be an easy spot to slot him in. But, yeah, you know, maybe they give Chris Taylor the day off again. He's already had a day off. Anyway, I don't know what they're going to do. But Gavin Lux has been in there every day so far, and he looks great. And I'm not surprised. I'm very pleased. And I'm – maybe relieved is the word. I know it doesn't actually affect me how well Gavin Lux does, but like you said, I've been driving the Gavin Lux train for a couple of years now. I've never wavered on my opinion that Gavin Lux is going to be a very good player. And it makes me feel good for him that he's doing it. And he looks, you know, Eric Karras was commenting a couple times during the game about just what a veteran he looks like, you know, taking pitches that are really close, putting good swings on the ball, everything about him. He looks confident at the plate. And for me, I feel like that's the most important thing for Gavin Lux is to go up there confident because he can hit. And it's just a matter of going up there confident. And we'll see, you know, the Dodgers really haven't faced a lot of lefties so far yet this year. Other than I think opening day was the only lefty starter they've faced so far. And they're not going to today, but I'm sure Gavin Lux will get days off this season. And when he does, they will be against lefties. But overall, Gavin Lux, he's a hitter and he is an athlete and he's great. And I actually, maybe I'm changing topics before you're ready for me too, but I actually love him in the nine spot, even though, you know, I saw people tweeting out move Lux up in the lineup. He's the only guy hitting, but once Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and Trey Turner do get hitting, having Gavin Lux right before them, it basically just lengthens that lineup. You know, they called the number nine spot the second leadoff man because basically you got Lux with speed who can get on base and he's not going to slow things down for the guys after him and can just kind of after the other than the first time through the order, he can be that second leadoff man. And really, I like the way the lineup lines up like that.
Yeah, I think the main point there is, you know, what you mentioned, what Caro said about the way he's approaching his at-bats. And we've heard it just about every game so far of, you know, him laying off certain pitches that he wouldn't have laid off before. Because if you go back last year, you know, a week into the season, he was hitting .368 with a .988 OPS. So we've seen, you know, him have a hot week or a hot streak like this before. But what we haven't seen is some of the stuff, like you mentioned, laying off certain pitches. I mean, he even himself called the two-run single on opening day his favorite at bat of his career so far, just because of, you know, what he did to get to that point, you know, taking the count 2-2 and then ended up coming with a two out RBI hit to kind of start the scoring there, replacing when he hit the big home run against the Mariners last season. So he just seems to have a little bit different mentality in terms of, you know, his approach at the plate. And like I said, Mark, he's comfortable. He knows that the Dodgers traded AJ Pollock with the intent of getting him more at-bats. You know, that's always something, you know, positive in your corner to instill that confidence. And now when it comes to the ninth spot, you know, it's a tricky thing sometimes because we saw this before with, you know, Yasiel Puig and other guys in the past where they seem to hit better down in the lineup. You want to be inclined to move them up in the lineup, but then they put some maybe unfair pressure on themselves, or it's just a different, you know, feeling, and they end up not hitting like they were before. You know, maybe Lex is perfect, exactly where he's at right there in the ninth spot. He's obviously going to get more pitches to hit with Mookie Betts in right after him anyways. You know, he's going to get on base for those guys at the top of the order for whenever they get going, like you mentioned. So I think everything kind of status quo for now. And then, you know, might have to adjust in a month or two if things continue for certain players and continue hot for him. But I think right now he's perfect where he's at.
Yeah. When we did our National League West crossover last week, a couple, I think it was Millard and Paul from Locked On D-backs and Locked On Rockies, who both predicted that Gavin Lux would be traded for a relief pitcher this year. And that was before the Dodgers had traded for Kimbrel. But even then, I told them, I said, if the Dodgers trade Lux for a reliever, I will eat all of your shoes, because Gavin Lux is not a guy you trade for a reliever. It's kind of like the Alex Verdugo thing. There was a guy on Twitter who was constantly harping that the Dodgers should trade Verdugo for some bullpen help. And I told him repeatedly, you don't trade a guy like Alex Verdugo for a reliever. And when the Dodgers did end up trading Verdugo, this guy came at me. He's like, I'm surprised you like this trade. You love Alex Verdugo. I said, no, the reason I didn't want to trade Alex Verdugo for a reliever is because he's the kind of guy you trade for Mookie Betts, you know? And that's the same thing with Gavin Lux. Even this offseason, when we thought he was likely to get traded, every time we talked about it, it was as the keystone in getting back a frontline starting pitcher. Not, you know, you don't trade Gavin Lux for spare parts. You don't trade him to fill a little niche need on your team. If you trade Gavin Lux, it's because you need an impact player back. And we're seeing why the Dodgers didn't choose to trade Gavin Lux, and why we are both so happy that they didn't, because he's good. And he looked good on defense too. Defense in the rain is hard. And especially, you know, playing that shift where he's playing on the outfield grass, he had a couple ground balls where I'm like, the ball's wet, the ground's wet. He's having to play on the grass when it's been on the dirt and everything. And he played him fine, you know? So everything about Gavin Lux makes me happy right now.
Yeah. Moving on to the rest of the offense. Cody Bellinger, rough night, 3 strikeouts. We have Max Muncy, who still hasn't had a hit or maybe only one other hit since opening day. Justin Turner, who hadn't looked that great, did have a nice RBI single there. And then Will Smith had the big hit of the day with the 2 RBI double. You know, on top of Gavin Lux's 2 RBI. So rest of the offense, it still was, you know, not running as smoothly. Freddie Freeman did have 2 hits, so that was good to see. But they did have that big offensive inning. And we talked a little bit yesterday about the boomer bust offense and just, you know, is this Dodgers team like that? And we both didn't think they would be in the long run, but if they're going to be boomer bust, at least until they figure things out. You know, it's not too bad to have boom. They've already had a boom in 3 or 4 games. They just didn't happen to. They allowed a lot of runs in the other game that they had the boom inning.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've noticed kind of a tendency sometimes on social media when the Dodgers do have a big inning, it almost makes some people more negative. It's like, well, how come they can't just do this all the time, you know? And I tweeted out a reminder today that the problem with boom or bust is the bus. You can boom as much as you want to. And that's what we expect from the Dodgers. What we expect is boom or slightly less boom. And I think that's what we're going to get as the season goes on, you know, and I think it's really important to look at entire games, because you could look at this game tonight as, while the Dodgers only scored 1 run in the first 7 innings, it was another boom or bust night. You can't boom or bust in a night. They scored 7 runs. If you score 7 runs in a game, that's a boom. The entire game is a boom. I don't care if you scored 6 of them in 1 inning. That's a boom game, you know, and because that's all it takes. And I will take a 6-run inning every single game, even if that means they only score 7 runs every game. Because if they score 7 runs every game, they're going to win 130 games this year, you know. And Max Muncy, you mentioned, he struggled, but he also walked 3 times. And walks were kind of the story, I think, in this game. After the Dodgers only walked 6 times in the whole 3-game series with the Rockies, the Dodgers had 9 walks in this game tonight, and Max Muncy had 3 of them. And for me, that kind of felt like them getting back into the Dodgers offense that we know and love.
Yeah, and obviously they, like you mentioned, hadn't walked before. They still struck out 10 times, but you don't notice it as much when they score 7 runs. And then, like I said, they have the 9 walks. You don't notice the 10 strikeouts as much. So that's a good sign there.
And to be fair, those numbers should be switched. It should be 10 walks and 9 strikeouts because Jerry Meals sucks.
Yeah.
Will Smith struck out looking on a full count pitch that was 6 inches outside, yeah. Only 5.38 inches outside. I apologize for the exaggeration.
Yeah. But yeah, it's an offense too that, like you said, or like we mentioned before, hasn't even got going yet. They still only have one home run on the year. That's Austin Barnes. And you would expect there to be a lot more home runs coming as the time goes on. But I think, you know, with this Dodgers offense and what they've done in the past and what they will continue to do, because they still have pretty much the same mentality, is wear a pitching staff down, get into a bullpen, you know, things of that nature. Obviously, early on in this season, it's going to be different because a lot of teams, you know, they didn't get into the Twins bullpen. The Chris Archer was just, you know, not built up yet, and they happened to get into the bullpen a little bit earlier, but took a couple innings to actually score. But in the long run, drawing those walks, you know, base hits here and there, death by a thousand cuts type of offense, that's what they've have thrived on in the past and what they probably still will. Adding that to, you know, the power that they do have, that'll finally, you know, some point will break out. You know, that's where the Dodgers offense gets you. And it's kind of, you know, with the Rockies, we saw a couple of times where, or, you know, Senzatella and Marquez both had pretty low pitch counts early on. We're getting through guys. And, you know, you don't mind the Dodgers being aggressive, but when they're not hitting, it's like, okay, maybe, you know, relax a little bit. And then when they do do it the other way, you know, sometimes they, you know, they had a couple runners on early on, didn't put them in. But I'd much rather see them work the count and, you know, not score runs than to swing at the first pitch and not score runs.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things about this offense that is going to make it so good is it's going to be hard to hold it down for nine innings. You can get through a time through the lineup. You can sometimes get through three times through the lineup without too much damage. But to win a game, you generally have to get through a lineup four times. And it's going to be pretty uncommon this season, I think, for an offense this good to go down four times without putting up a pretty decent fight.
Yeah. Anything else from the offense, Jeff, that you want to mention?
Or from
the rest of the game?
No, that was, I guess the other time Will Smith got jobbed again, got a ball four stolen from him again in his next at bat, and almost as bad a call as the one he struck out looking at. Luckily, this one was only strike two, and then he hit a two-run double. And so I like that poise for him after getting terrible calls against him twice to come back and hit the ball that hard, that at bat. I thought that was very mature hitter-ish of him.
Yeah. Real quick, just looking at the game in the morning, hopefully you're listening to this before the game because it is a little bit early for us on the West Coast, but Clayton Kershaw, we'll finally see him on the mound and we get to face an old friend. Maybe this is what the offense needed. Chris Paddock is supposed to be on the mound for the Twins, I believe. So maybe the sheriff will get the Dodgers offense going like he did in the past.
Yeah, it could happen.
Yeah. Moving on, or sticking, I guess, with kind of Padres-ish, and Paddock was on the Padres, just going around. We had a situation with Padres-Giants. Giants jumped out to a big early lead. Game kind of slogged its way on over there. But in the sixth inning, we had Mauricio Dubon of the Giants bunt his way on, and it seemed like the Padres dugout was unhappy with it. And then you saw Gabe Kapler talk to him when he came back into the dugout. And, you know, we always get these type of things, not necessarily always in Dodger games, but just in general about baseball and these unwritten rules and everything else. And is this one fair or foul, or are you going to give me a wishy-washy answer as Brandon Johnson might allude to?
You know, I don't know if my answer is wishy-washy or not. I definitely have an opinion. And my opinion is the only reason you should change the way you play baseball is if it benefits your team to do it. So that's why, like, when you have a big lead, I'm in favor of not stealing bases, because when you steal a base, there's a chance of pulling a hamstring. There's a chance of jamming a thumb on a base. The risk reward there doesn't pay off. And so for me, that's why if I was a manager, I would stop stealing bases with a big lead. Bunting for a hit, I don't think there's any of that risk. As a player, I don't think I would do it because it's a selfish move. Your team's going to win this game. Earlier in the game, I get it. You know, there was also, I guess, Steven Duggar, I think, stole a base when they were up by, I think they were only up by 8-ish runs when he stole the base in the second inning, and ended up causing a confrontation between Mike Shildt and the Giants' first base coach that caused an ejection. Second inning is too early to be thinking about anything like that. But the sixth inning, I think it was a selfish move by Dubon. And so as a player, I think that's probably more what Gabe Kapler talked to him about. You know, Kapler seemed to definitely told him you shouldn't have bunted there. We don't know exactly what he said, but he definitely told him something along those lines. But even then, I think it's more because you want team players, and it doesn't actually help the team that much. Go up there and, you know, it's a good chance to get some good batting practice. All a bunt single does is literally pad your personal numbers, unless he did want to work on bunting, you know, and maybe it's, hey, it's a risk-free time to work on my bunting and I might need to do that. If that's the case, I have no problem with it. So, but all in all, I don't think the team that is getting blown out should be allowed to have any say in what the team with the big lead is allowed to do. It all comes down to risk reward on the part of that team. But I also think that Gabe Kapler, as the manager, regardless of his reasoning, has the right to tell Mauricio Dubon, don't bunt to that situation, regardless of what his reasons are, because he's in charge of his team.
Yeah, Dubon had one hit in the season to that point, so maybe he did want to – whatever his reasoning was, you know, I don't – I think the bigger part is, and maybe another thing that Kapler might have told him is that, okay, you do that, then the next guy might get hit, or someone later in the game might get hit, and it might start something that, you know, has no reason to be started. And that, I think, is, you know, another point too. I think they were talking about on the TBS broadcast is, you know, you're putting whoever's batting directly after you at risk. You're putting whoever bats for the rest of the game at risk. You know, some teams still go by that way of you know, handling things with hit by pitches. And, you know, that might be another reason for it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I guess it just depends. Like you said, maybe he did want to try on bunting, and maybe that's something he wants to add to his repertoire. But what I've seen from Dubon, just from, you know, having people that are Giants fans and stuff like that, he's not the best base runner. So maybe he's just a guy that just doesn't quite understand what everything that's happening. So I don't know.
Yeah, Bob Melvin was definitely upset in the dugout. But other than that, I thought the Padres actually handled it pretty well. You could tell that Eric Hosmer had a little conversation with Dubon at first base, but it was a friendly conversation. And I expect, you know, Hosmer's status in the game, he's a veteran. You know, he probably told him, hey, kid, just so you know, here's why that was probably a bad idea. You know, he said it with a smile-ish on his face and didn't seem aggressive. And then Denelson Lamet just struck out the next three batters, which is the best revenge for anything. Just get out of the inning, you know. Get the next guy out. And then Dubon came up again. I thought there might be some fireworks, and he batted in the eighth inning. But by then it was Will Myers pitching. And so he wasn't going to actually throw at him. Couldn't throw hard enough to hurt him anyway. And so, yeah, you know, all in all, it's one of those cases of silly unwritten rules that I understand why they're there. And I understand why Melvin was upset, and I understand why Kapler did what he did. And yeah. So yeah, I think that is pretty wishy-washy. That's for you, Brandon.
Jock Peterson did take Will Myers deep, so, you know, that's always fun, I guess, if that's what you're into. The other part of that game was some MLB history when the Giants first base coach was ejected. I saw it was because he handed something to a player, possibly, that is not allowed anymore.
I just saw something on Twitter that said it was because of a confrontation between him and Mike Schilt after the stolen base, but that could have been wrong. That was just what I saw.
Yeah, but either way, it led to Alyssa Nacken being the first base coach for the rest of the game for the Giants, becoming the first woman coach to be on the field in a regular season game. So, you know, it's something that I would imagine we're going to see more in the future. We've already seen more coaches. We have a female manager or a woman manager in the minor leagues right now, but, you know, just there's always got to be a first, and Alyssa Nacken happened to be the first.
Yeah, it's a cool moment for her. We kind of knew she was already the first female coach on a major league staff, and so it made sense. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if she does end up being somebody's full-time first base coach at some point. And it's a cool moment for her. I definitely think I think there are physical reasons why we're unlikely to see very many, if any, women actually playing in the big leagues. They definitely can be coaches. I think there's a lot that they can contribute. You can know the game, and there's so much more. And we're seeing that a lot with a lot of teams, even with hiring their coaches and managers. You know, Robert Vanskoyak, the Dodgers hitting coach, never played. And you know, he's a hitting coach of a really good team. And so I think there are plenty of spots available. And I think that we probably will see over the years, women slowly start to trickle into the major league coaching staffs.
Yeah. One other thing, just going around the league, Brett Phillips, who had a wild night a couple nights ago when he was on the mound for the Rays, made a crazy catch, gave up a home run, told Christian Pache to hit the weight room when he hit one to the warning track. Had a little bit different night last night when he met a young lady before the game who has cancer, battling cancer for the second time, 8-year-old. She gave him a bracelet and gave him a letter of why she likes him as a player. He ended up wearing the bracelet and hitting a home run. And, you know, just definitely want to highlight these types of moments in baseball, and even if it's not related directly to the Dodgers.
Yeah, and, you know, with Brett Phillips, we can always relate it to the Dodgers because previous to today, the biggest moment in his career came against the Dodgers in the World Series. But it kind of underscores why once the Dodgers finished winning the World Series in 2020, I've actually kind of enjoyed watching that highlight from Game 4 because it's – for me, I find it impossible not to like Brett Phillips. He's just a very likable guy. When he was interviewed after the game tonight and they told him that that little Chloe was on TV being interviewed when he hit that home run, he broke into tears. He fought tears the rest of the interview, and he is just a likable guy. And so I'm happy for him. And, you know, he's one of those guys who he's not actually a great baseball player, but he does enough, and he's so likable. He's a guy you could picture playing for 18 years despite never being very good just because everybody wants him on their team.
Yeah, that's very possible. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about Brett Phillips at some point just based on how his personality is the rest of the way. But that's going to do it for today's episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back tomorrow talking about the final game of the series, Clayton Kershaw's first start of the season. If you want to check out something else after making us your first listen of the day, check out Locked On MLB. With host Paul Francis Sullivan, a.k.a. Sully. He brings you a unique perspective on the major leagues past and present. Make sure to make Locked On Dodgers your first listen of the day every day. We're available wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. Subscribe if you would like. That would be very appreciative, or we would be very appreciative. If you want to find us on social media, we are on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On Dodgers. Jeff is on Twitter at Snydog. I'm at Vince Amperio. DMs are open on all those accounts if you want to get a hold of us. Other ways to get a hold of us are email lockedondodgers@gmail.com and voicemail text at 323-863-5625. We're here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be with us when you get in your car. If you're at home, tell your smart device, play a podcast, Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. Have a good one.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.